Welcome to Scrappy ABM. This is your podcast with practical playbooks that don't break the bank. In this podcast, we dig into the exact playbooks that ABM practitioners are using today to get their first ABM program off the ground. We'll dig into how they're using their current tech stack in order to create scrappy programs that rely more on creativity than new technologies. So if you're looking for how to get ABM off the ground in your organization in the next 90 days, let's dive into this episode. Welcome to this episode of Scrappy ABM. I am incredibly excited you're here, and this is actually probably going to be one of my favorite episodes that we've recently released. It's actually coming from a webinar that we did a couple weeks back, and they were kind enough to let us reuse it here. We do a ton of deep dives on specifically how to build a program. So if there's any questions, feel free to reach out to me. And also, we try to drop the link to every webinar that we repurpose in the show notes. So if you want to see the visuals as well, go check out the show notes to see the full replay of that webinar. We'll see you in this episode.
Good day, everybody. Welcome to today's webinar, the one for the week. Today, we've got Mason Cosby, founder and CEO of Scrappy ABM. For those of you who don't know Mason, I'm going to ask Mason to quickly give us a little bit of an introduction about himself. And I think specifically also, why ABM? Why did you choose that vertical to go into? Yeah. So over to you, Mason.
Well, Stefan, thank you so much for having me today. I'm excited to be here. Yeah, I mean, long and short, I've been building ABM programs for about 5 years, and I learned how to do ABM without any of the right technology. So I was given the ABM mandate, said, we need to build this program so we can get better customers, but we only have a CRM, we only have a marketing automation platform, and you can go create a bunch of content, right? So that's what I did. First program, utterly failed, probably almost got fired, if I'm being honest. So I learned a lot of really hard lessons through that, and I'm happy to share today. Second program by miracle worked, and I figured out a lot of the fundamentals from there, and then just started to replicate that style and approach. We developed a couple of frameworks, like our 4D framework and the account progression model, that make it easier to now understand how to replicate those successes. And now our company, Scrappy ABM, has built 30 ABM programs in just the past 18 months, currently actively building about 14 with a team about 11 strong. So we help our clients build their first ABM program, teach them how it all works, and then graduate them when they're ready. So that is who we are and what we do.
Cool. I just quickly want to stand still on that, those numbers. I just started your course this morning for interest sake. I like this numbers that you drop, like the 70% better than everything else. Quickly zoom into that just to like frame the conversation. Like what are the numbers you're seeing on these programs that you guys are building? Just for like the audience to understand what we're getting into here.
Yeah, I mean, when you look at some of the data that's come out around account-based marketing, generally you're seeing a 70% increase in pipeline value, a 70-ish percent increase in pipeline velocity, 70% increase in sales satisfaction with marketing programs. So again, generally speaking, and I want to be super clear, it's each one of those stats is somewhere in the 70 to 80% range. Feel free to go Google those to get the exact stats. But I mean, it's 70% or greater on those different metrics, which is what you see with the successful implementation of an ABM program. So that's really what we're trying to accomplish, is we want higher deal values that close faster with better customers. And that's easy to say, it's really hard to do, but hopefully we can help you today figure out some of the ways you can start doing that today.
Yeah, every single B2B marketer and salesperson is struggling with that. I guess that's the main challenge that we go for. Cool. So ABM, account-based marketing. From my perspective, and at least for the past few years, and I've done my fair share at B2C and B2B, I've seen this term create a lot of confusion. I've seen sales leaders, revenue leaders throw this at people, let's do this, and they go to like, I've seen people go to like the head of content and just go and say, can we please do account-based marketing? Can we get it off the ground? I've seen people see this as part of content marketing. I've seen people see this as just a general part of demand generation. This is obviously wrong. And I think there's a lot of marketers out there and salespeople, obviously, that have a bit of a misconception about where this fits into the mix particularly, and like why it is actually this big standalone strategy that requires a lot of attention and resources and dedication from multiple departments all at once. And you can't just go hand this over to your head of content or your sales representative and say, you know, launch this program and run it and then expect results on the other side. Like you just mentioned, you almost got fired for it failing. And I that happens often because it's like, hey, let's do this. And then it doesn't work. And then someone asks like, hey, someone needs to be responsible for the wasted resources we just did.
Yeah.
Where does this fit into the mix? And how do you define ABM from your perspective?
Yeah, so we'll start with definition. So ABM is a B2B revenue strategy that aligns marketing, sales, and customer success around a set of shared target accounts. So that's the definition we've been running with for about 18 months. Actually, like 2 weeks ago, we added a little bit on to that definition to make it even more specific. So it's not just a set of shared target accounts, but it's a set of shared target accounts that are representative of your best fit customers. I think that that addition specifically has made it a lot more clear for people of, okay, well, who are those shared target accounts? So that is the core definition. As we think through where it fits, I view it as the second motion that most organizations should build. So I made quite a few posts on LinkedIn. I have people that ask all these questions of like, well, what are we supposed to do to generate revenue now? I'm like, that's a great question. ABM is for companies that have found product market fit. So typically, once you've established product market fit, you've been doing other things previously, like content marketing or social selling or podcasting or events. And you've got some other programs that are running. They're just not as efficient because you're going after a much wider audience to figure out who you even best serve. But once you figure out who you best serve and you've got established product market fit, the goal of an account-based strategy is to then get really clear and specific and focused to where everybody then reorients the way in which they are engaging these audiences from a marketing and a sales perspective primarily on how do we get more of these customers in the door. So that's typically where it fits. It's a shift in the organization. So it's not necessarily we stop everything else that we're doing and we start ABM, but there is a transitionary period where we reorient the ways in which we are doing marketing to only focus on these customers so we can get more, better, higher profit customers.
Cool. I just first want to say, I love the fact that you call it a revenue strategy. I think that's the most spot on, like that I've heard it at least. It's not just marketing, it's not just sales. And you also bring customer success into the mix because obviously we know in B2B, it's customer success that hold on for dear life to those accounts once they come over the line. And obviously the better these accounts are prepped, the more they are educated, the more well-informed they are, the easier that job is. And if everyone across the board is aligned, it's not this one thing that one person earns in one department. It becomes a organization-wide strategy, basically. I just quickly want to ask, just for like, solidifying, you said best fit customer. That is more narrow than ICP. Am I correct? Like your ICP is like, we're targeting this group. Best fit is like, if you can pick the next 10 people that walk through the door, what do they look like? Like, what is that definition of the customer?
Yeah, this is going to get really nerdy for a moment, so forgive me. But as we look at the ways in which you determine your best fit customer, ideally it's the top 20% of your current customer base. Typically, we're looking at product utilization, NPS scores, and profitability. And specifically, in the context of profitability, it's lifetime gross profit to customer acquisition cost. If you can determine the customer set that gives you the greatest amount of profit for the least cost to acquire, that is a best customer. Like, that is a really great customer, and you want more of those. So that customer set is a part of your current customer profile. So I look at the current customer profile as who's currently here, like what are the trends within those customers? And an ideal situation is that your ideal client profile is representative of the top 20% of your customers. That is a different approach than most people think about ideal client profile. Kind of made this joke acronym of aspirational client profile. So like, sure, I'd love to work with Apple and Microsoft and Netflix on their programs, but like I probably never will because they're not actually my ideal customer. Ideal would be high profit. So like, I want more high profit customers that love our product, that love working with us, that send more business that's just like them to us, and that stick around for a really long time. That sounds ideal to me. So when I think about the idea of ICP, that is what we're trying to accomplish. So to your point, I don't actually think it's more specific than how I define ICP, but I think it's a redefining of what an ICP functionally is. And if you've nailed that definition, which is in my mind, again, the characteristics and traits of the top 20% of your current customer base. That is the ICP. Then, no, I don't actually think it's different. I just think it's a redefining how we view our ideal client profile.
Cool, but yeah, you did answer my question. That is it's not that definition that the marketing team just comes up with and like, we're going to go after these customers. And also like how you split out the aspirational, because oftentimes if you go ask the sales guys, who do you want to work with? We're compiling a list. You also pointed out in your course, is like, they're just like going to raise your bunch of accounts. We want to work with these guys, get us like something that's going to like get these people booked in my calendar. That is not the way to go. Which then I guess brings us over to more framing in this conversation is where it goes wrong most of the time. And I think this is important, because if you know where it goes wrong, you know which common pitfalls to obviously avoid. And that's the best place to start, because otherwise you run into a brick wall, you make the mistakes that you made on your first run, you can almost lose your job. That's scary. You risk completely like burning your relationship with the sales team, especially if you're new at like a company where this needs to be implemented. You're the hero in the room, and then if your ABM strategy goes south, you are the villain in the room. So from your perspective, working with this quite often, obviously on a large scale, what are the common pitfalls that you see as the main kind of breakage, number one, and obviously number two, that is like dead set, avoid these by all costs?
Yeah, so a couple of things. One, my perspective is actually largely based in a lot of research and data that's been done over the past 5 or 6 years. So I want to make really clear, we've built 30-ish programs and we're seeing these trends within these 30-ish programs. And I've had 150-ish conversations with different marketing leaders in the past year and a half on building ABM programs, whether that be through podcasting or like sales conversations. So these are the very consistent trends that come up based on my conversations, but also like a lot of research and a body of work from multiple different organizations. So like, I'd also just Google this to validate it for yourself. But the number one reason is a lack of sales and marketing alignment, which everyone talks about. I'm going to talk about it from two different angles on why this comes up. Second is a lack of dedicated resources, which is a fancy way of saying like nobody actually owns ABM. And then lastly is that we don't know how to measure success. So to break that down a little bit further, on the lack of sales and marketing alignment, typically two flavors this comes up. Flavor one is, you know, sales doesn't currently have pipeline, so they're losing their minds trying to just get anything in the door. And when you said, well, we're not going to sell everybody, we're going to only sell our best fit, they're like, cool, cool, cool. So like, you're robbing me of my livelihood. Got it. So like, it doesn't go super well typically. So what we want to do is make sure that the sales pipeline is relatively filled before we actually make this transition. Because as long as sales has things to work that are good fits, they may not be the best fits, but they're good fits. Like, they're still good customers. I'm not saying closed, terrible customers. They will then have this transitionary period where they're still working deals, and then it should end up becoming a relatively seamless transition. There will be a dip somewhere where you have less pipeline, but that's okay, because ideal situation is when you're building an ABM program, you should see an increase in the volume of those, or the value of those deals, and how quickly and how efficiently they close. So you should see higher close rates, so it ends up evening out. But again, if you just go cold turkey and you're like, we don't have a pipeline right now, we're just going to go do ABM all of a sudden, you're going to get a mutiny, because sales doesn't know what to do. And that's, in my mind, very reasonable.
Yeah, like, by all means. I mean, they've got targets. They've got tighter targets with people in the company. Just before you get over to the other points, just like a follow-up question there. How do you, because if all goes smooth, it goes in the direction you just said. Yes, the full pipeline, there's a bit of a dip, but there's a smooth transition. In reality, that doesn't always work that way, right? So what's the best way to kind of manage that? I assume like high-level stakeholder management, everyone needs to understand that there will be a bit of a dip. Like, no one's going to get into trouble if the dip does come, and it's not like there's a transition period. There's change management that needs to happen on the organization-wide level as well, right?
Yes. I mean, it's... all of this is expectation management. So again, if you go to your executive leadership team, or ideally your executive leadership team is actually bought in already, that's the actually fifth reason that ABM typically fails, but conversation for another day. But the long and short is, yeah, I mean, if they're not bought in at an executive leadership team level, or they haven't gotten the board bought in, if you're backed by PE or VC, you're gonna be in a lot of trouble, because again, we're typically looking at pipeline value as the leading indicator for revenue. And we're actually like, that's the goal that marketing consistently has to hit. And if marketing decreases the pipeline volume, even though some of that pipeline was never real in the first place, people get upset. So like, yes, there has to be buy-in on that front. The other thing, though, is I typically look at, before launching an ABM program, building a couple of just highly repeatable playbooks that help you get good customers. They're not best, but they're good. So things like a repeatable closed loss program, a customer win back program, an event activation program, meaning like you go to events and based on the events that you're attending, you actually get meetings booked before the event. Then you have specific playbooks that you run during the event to get more meetings, and you've got a good follow-up process. Most organizations only focus on the follow-up process. So they're really missing good opportunities to make greater impacts at events because they're not pre-booking meetings. Mm-hmm. So those are very standard playbooks. Another one would be website re-engagement, or another one would be champion tracking, which is following your current customers as they make job transitions to go to the next company. Like, that's five playbooks right there that are typically able to be set up within the context of your current technology and can just run evergreen. The most difficult one in that is going to be champion tracking, but here's a little hack. Check hard bounced email addresses within your current customers. So segment customer plus hard bounce. If they have a hard bounce, they likely no longer work there. That's half the picture. Obviously, you need to go figure out where they went. No, but like, that's a good leading indicator to help you understand where to go follow up.
Cool. Thank you. Over to the next big reason. Sorry, I've completely diverted you
from your... It's a good question. Part two to sales and marketing alignment, which is nothing that marketing can't fix, is compensation. So there are many sales teams that are actually bonused based on the number of deals that they close versus the value of those deals. And I didn't know that until we started building a lot of programs, because I've always been bonused based on deal value and percentage of the deal. But, you know, there are certain companies that they have a standard ACV, so they want you to close more and more and more deals, even though these are lower fit customers because they don't last as long, so they churn. So the sales team is actually incentivized to close not our best fit customer. They're incentivized to close more customers, which is not always best for the business. Mm-hmm. So again, if that's the case and you build up this out, for lack of a word, perfectly, which no one will, but you build it out pretty well, and you still can't get buy-in from sales, the question is always, okay, well, how are they incentivized and compensated? One of the common phrases that's said in an EBM program by marketers is like, sales will help you make more money. But I actually asked in a presentation like this, 150 marketers that were building ABM programs, who knows how their sales team is compensated? Not like the numbers, but like, do you know how they make their commissions? And two people did. So like, it's disingenuous as marketers to say, we'll help you make more money when we don't know how our sales teams are compensated. So that's the second reason within the context of that alignment piece is like, nobody's going to do something that makes them less money. So if you can figure out how to actually make them make more money, they will buy in.
Yeah, that's obviously when you're dealing with your more kind of operational level. Like if your higher like a marketing leader like runs the or initiates the program, it's obviously more like common to know the sales targets. But yeah, that's very true, because salespeople are also very skeptical when marketing tells them we're going to make you more money. I mean, there's it's a notorious relationship, right? It's always, there's always a blame game, kind of like, if my pipeline's not full, it's marketing's problem. Sales is not doing a good job because they're not closing the leads we're giving them. Yeah, so I'm personally a big fan of also bringing the two together, and obviously ABM can do that as a good program to do it. But you do need that understanding of like, what is my colleague actually getting out of this? Like, what does his realistic day-to-day job look like? Like, what's his target, number one? And number two, also, what's on the other side of not reaching that target? It's scary, usually. Cool. Next reason. So,
typically someone may join a webinar like this, or they'll go to a conference or something, and they will hear somebody talk about the incredible success that they have with an account-based marketing program. Again, we started with like 70% increase across the board, but we don't also necessarily talk about often, and I try to talk about this a lot, is that like 80% of ABM programs between 2020 and 2023 failed. So like, most of the time they're not working, which is a major problem. So we only talk about like, this is amazing and successful. And like, we don't get into the nitty gritty of like, these things often don't work. And second reason is because we just kind of throw it at one person. It's typically a marketing manager. I lovingly refer to her as Susie. And Susie already had a full-time day job. So like, her boss went to a conference and said, when she got back, we have got to build this ABM program. So then suddenly Susie has an entire program that's oriented at the core that she is nowhere even close to equipped to facilitating.
Go do
it. Just like do it. So the phrase that I've used a lot is she's been given the accountability for organizational change without the authority to create it. Mm-hmm. So that's why this typically doesn't work. So as you look at building out a program, yes, there needs to be someone that's like doing the tactics and helping build everything out operationally or creating the content or building the strategy. But like there has to be executive buy-in to say like, this is a priority. And now as an executive with a team, my main job at this point is give a direction and remove roadblocks. But what often happens is leaders just give directions and then just kind of leave them on an island and say, figure it out. And it doesn't end up working. And especially with ABM, because it's organizational change, there's lots of roadblocks. Like there's lots of resistance to changing how we've always done things, because why would we? We've always done it this way. Well, maybe it's because our customers are churning super high and like these specific customers aren't. So like, it's actually best for the business to make this change. It's just hard. So that's the second big reason is we just throw it at somebody, tell them to figure it out. Typically they get 6 months to figure it out. If that, it doesn't work, they get fired. Or ABM didn't work for me, when like it's really hard to argue at the idea that if we really figured out who our best customer was and built marketing programs to get more of those people, that that won't work. Like it's in theory and in principles, it works. It just doesn't work for most people because they don't do the legwork to change the process and to actually align the organization around this is going to be different and it's going to be better.
Cool. Just a follow-up question there before we get to the metrics. Do you ever split up as like a method to almost prove success? Do you ever split up and say like, say half of the sales team or 70% of the sales team just keep doing what you're doing? And this group of marketers and this group of these sales agents, we're going to run this test experiment with you and see what the results are versus like the control, for instance. Is that like a common practice that you...
Yeah, that is absolutely the recommendation, because this is always hard. So my recommendation is you typically have a group of 1 to 3 sellers that are open to change. And that may look like a couple of different flavors. So again, maybe they're newer in the organization. They don't know how things have always been done. And like they've got good potential. Another one, and I hate to say it this way, is like take the rep that's already on a PIP and then give them a lot of support. And that kind of turnaround story as an internal case study actually kills it when it works, because wow, like John sucked at his job. And then he built an ABM program with marketing and he's like making good money. So then it's an easier way to get buy-in on that. So yeah, I would start with 1 to 3. And the other core reason is like, this is an experiment. I'd be lying if I told you going in, we know exactly how everything's going to go because we've never done this. Mm. So the smaller you can keep the group, the more rapidly you can iterate on the process. And it's really hard after you've done a process rollout to like 80 people to then change the process again. So a pilot group that's really small and really tight is a really great way to actually build the program in the first place to then see what works and what doesn't.
Cool. Thank you. Made logical sense to me, but maybe not to everyone. So there's a nice nugget of, if you're running into this, to, you know, run a pilot, it makes out of a lot of sense. Cool. And then you're like the fourth reason you said was the measurement of success, right? So
yeah, so targeting. Yeah. So most organizations have a CRM and marketing automation platform. And as you like just boot up one of those out of the box, they're almost always very contact focused in nature. So like HubSpot, Salesforce have native lead scoring capabilities. Mm-hmm. Most of the time they don't have native account scoring capabilities. So we don't have a way to aggregate the lead scores or the engagement metrics into an account score natively, which means you have to build that out, which also means that's a lot of work because, okay, well, what determines a hot account? And I'm just going to like, because I on my podcast asked somebody that had worked like some very large companies. And I asked him, like, what's step one to building out an engagement scoring model? And he was like, talk to your data science team. And I was like, I've never worked at a company that had a data science team. So like, it's not like a scrappy approach. So really, as I think through it, like what he's referencing is a true account scoring mechanism. Involves third-party intent data to show in-market signals. If you have partnership programs, it includes second-party partner data to showcase the alignment from a organization-to-organization perspective. It also includes first-party engagement data to see the contacts that have been engaging with your brand. It also then factors in the weight of that engagement, because like as an organization that sells to marketers, the engagement of a CMO is exponentially more impactful than the engagement of a marketing assistant. Mm-hmm. So like, that is all just engagement or in-market signals, not to then also factor in, again, the firmographic data of like revenue, headcount, industry, technographics that also impact our scoring models. So like that super complicated. So some people actually spend like 6 months trying to build that out before they launch the program. And it's this like chicken or the egg situation. Do we build the reporting capabilities to actually run the program and spend 6 months trying to figure out how to report on a program that doesn't exist yet? Or do we build a program where we don't know how to exactly measure success? Like, kind of hard situation.
Here we go. Lean more towards question. What do you do first? Yeah. What's your recommendation?
I build the program. Build the program and then piggyback off your current engagement metrics. So like first ABM program measurement will likely be very contact focused in nature. But what you're trying to understand is who are the people that are engaged in our content? And you can see that. And what is their current level of engagement? And then once you've actually started to understand who typically engages within the context of the accounts that you're going after, because it might be different people. Again, I've had director of marketing come in, I've had the CMO come in, both of them close. They just are different based on the size of the organization, mm-hmm. who is actually making that purchase decision. Yeah. So like, we understand who is involved and who is typically actually like driving the deal forward within the context of these organizations that we're targeting. And then we can actually start to track that data over time to then inevitably build out the scoring model. But like, if your team is bought in on, we're going to build this program and it's going to be contact focused for the first 3 to 6 months from a measurement perspective, based on our current measurement capabilities, it's not going to be perfect, but like we can then report on a program that is functioning and have gaps. Some people want to solve all the problems before they get started, and like, more power to you. I don't. I solve problems as they come, and I'd rather have a successful program that's running that like we just feel, because we see better fit customers coming in. We're like, cool, we'd like better reporting on this. Mm-hmm. Great. That's a different problem. Like, we don't have a program running. It's not perfect, but like, this is what has worked for many clients that we're working with. And this is how I started, is just build a program, get more good fit customers, and then build the reporting capabilities out around it based on what you're currently able to track.
Cool. Yeah. And that also makes, like, especially if you're launching it from scratch, like, you want to be experimenting at the beginning. You're not going to like hit bullseye immediately with the approach. So like, yeah, it makes sense. Don't spend like all the time building success metrics, and then you need to start still experimenting to fill the pipeline with the right customer. Cool.
Yep.
Thank you. Very insightful. So then that brings me to the next big bullet point in our discussion. This is then basically the playbook. Now let's split the remaining kind of 20 minutes up into like almost 10 minutes of the playbook. Now, obviously this is very hard to put into 10 minutes, but what is that like? From the moment you say go, what does that look like? Like, if we now establish that, cool, we're doing this with a pilot. So number one is obviously pitch this to the right people. Make sure you've got, you know, stakeholder buy and determine who the pilot is. What's the playbook of getting this situation started? Who needs to be involved? Who are the critical stakeholders that need to be on board besides the leadership team buy-in? Like, from the marketing department, who do you need? Like, what roles do you need? How many of them do you need? Can you do it with two people? Do you need five people? What do you need from the sales team? What do you need from the CS team? And then what's the almost like the steps you would basically, or the sequence in which you would implement things up to the point where you get to the point where you're like, hey, we want better measurement on this.
So, sorry to give you a consulting answer, but it depends, because for example, my first ABM program was in a really small organization. So like, I was marketing and we had one salesperson. So like, we built the ABM program mm-hmm. together. And then my boss was our, because again, it was a 30 person organization. So like, she was involved and that was it. That was the whole team. So like, it's pretty easy. Whereas we work with some clients that have like 150 person sales team and like multiple layers of sales management. And then like, one of our clients has a team of 80 marketers. So like, who's involved in that? So I would get really specific to, from the marketing perspective, these are the core roles that you need. And some people can wear multiple hats and fill multiple roles. So like, it is a strategist. Somebody has to build the plan of mm-hmm. like, what are we actually going and doing? It is a revenue operations person or a marketing operations or however you want to call them, kind of an operations person that can build things out in your tech stack. It's a content person. Like, you need somebody that can create content for these accounts. And then I also look at it through the lens of somebody needs to drive the project forward. Depending on your organization, you may actually have internal marketing project managers. You may also just have the strategist dual hat that of like driving the project forward. And again, there's many strategists that are incredibly operationally inclined, or they come from a content background. So again, some people can wear multiple hats, but like somebody's got to drive the project forward. Somebody has to actually build the plan. Someone has to actually write the content, and someone has to build it in the context of the tech stack. So like those are the four marketing roles that we look for. And then the other component is just channel ownership. So like if you have a variety of channel owners, it depends on the channels that you're going to actually run. Might be email, might be paid media, might be events. Some organizations have people that are dedicated to like the event program or their paid media program, like, or other organizations don't, and they just have one person that runs all of it. So it's channel ownership. So those are the core roles on the marketing side. Again, that can be one person. I would run it. Or it could be 10. So like those are the roles though. And then from a marketing leadership perspective, you need somebody that has a direct line to the CEO to actually get alignment, because the CEO, you've got to get buy-in. It is, if you're in a much larger organization, it's buying from the P&L holder. Mm-hmm. So like who's responsible for the actual profit and loss of the business or the business unit, that's the person you need to get buy-in from on this transition. So that's an executive leadership seat. On the sales side, and sales executive leadership, so somebody's actually saying, we're agreed to this, like we're going to go for this. And then you need somebody that is doing some form of outbound. So you need a BDR or an SDR or whatever the DR is. And then you need an account executive. Sometimes that's the same person. I love cradle to grave account executives, run the whole process. Sometimes it's 2, 3, 4, 5 people. Ideally, you're keeping it small though. And if you're gonna have it be 6 people, I would have it be 3 SDRs and 3 AEs, because you've got the meeting setting component and then you have the actual closing component. So that's—
That also gives you more data really across the pipeline, obviously.
Yeah. So the largest I would go is 6, but it's 3 and 3 roles. Mm-hmm. And then the other component is a sales manager that has a compliance dashboard that is actually bought in on creating accountability for the sales team to action the things that are a part of the ABM program. So if you have all of those in place, you're good to go. Again, the smallest I've seen it done is a team of 3, and that's executive leadership buy-in, a marketer and a seller. I've also seen it done from a pilot program of like the sales side, I just outlined like 8 people. The marketing side, I just outlined like potentially 10. So like it can get pretty big pretty quick. I recommend keeping it as small as humanly possible. That way you play less games of telephone.
Yeah. And obviously it's rather more about the kind of task ownership than it's about you bumps on seats really. So it's the stuff you just mentioned. If there's one person doing multiple of those, it's even better to keep the pilot like cool. And then first thing first is the strategy, I guess, the plan.
Yeah. So when we look at the strategy, typically I like to piggyback off of existing programs. Side note, we've got 45 minutes here. There's like a 2-hour course in CXL where I go into like way more excruciating details on this. But at a high level, like if you are trying to build your first strategy, there's 2 core components. It is the account progression model. Another way to think about that is our buyer's journey. So like, what are the stages that an account would go through to actually consider us for being a partner of theirs? And then the other component is our activation playbook framework, which I'll outline here in just a moment. I think of it in those ways of like your account progression model is the strategy. It's like, how are we actually progressing accounts one stage to the next? The activation plays are the tactics. And then everything that I just outlined earlier of like getting all these different teams aligned, that's really the set shared of target accounts that are our best fit customers. That's the who. So like, if you know who you're going after, you know how you're going to progress them, and you know what you're doing, then you've got a good program. Some people are like, well, where's the why? The why should be the business premise. So like, that is a much larger problem than an ABM program can solve. But as I think through ABM, it's who, how, and what. So from there, the goal of the account progression model is clear stages and clear definitions of how we measure success at each stage. So that's awareness, initial engagement, meaningful engagement, marketing qualified account, sales qualified account, re-engagement, and opportunity. So awareness, the measures of success should be, do we know that they know that we exist? Mm-hmm. Now, that sounds really complicated, but like no one can buy from you if they don't know that you exist.
Did they were they on the website? Did they do anything physically trackable that like they
the brand? It may not even be website engagement. It might truly just be like they followed us on social. Like we know that they know the we exist. Yeah. So like that's awareness. Mm-hmm. From there, it's then initial engagement, which is just, do we know that they have a problem that we could potentially solve? And you can look at that through a lot of the, what is deemed awareness level content of like seven ways to solve for X. So like if people are engaging with a lot of ABM content from us on like all the reasons ABM fails, we know they may have a problem. Meaningful engagement is how do we validate that we know that they're exploring viable solutions. So that could be websites, that could be
checking out the price
things, but just like, how do we know that they're exploring viable solutions? I view marketing qualified account as we know that they understand the viability of our solution. Mm-hmm. So simply put, product page, pricing page, schedule, call page, like viewing those pages are a good way to know that they know that we have good product.
Oh, downloading your white paper.
That's probably the initial engagement stage at best. From there, the SQA stage is qualification from sales for timing mm-hmm. and budget. Mm-hmm. Fit should already be determined before they ever made it on the
You shouldn't have someone in there who's not a fit, obviously, ideally.
Yeah. Exactly. And then we have a real opportunity, which is then worked. And then the last stage, which we've recently added, because we just had so many people that like would get an account to the first meeting. They're like, oh, it's not the right time. And then just not do anything with that account ever again. And it was like, you got them right there. Like, just keep them engaged. So we built re-engagement programming. It's a stage because timing is right, even though they're a great fit. So again, just to keep them engaged with your brand so that when the time is right, you're always still top of mind.
Cool. Awesome. Makes sense. Just a quick side question. Don't spend too much time on this, but your preferred tech stack for like getting the CRM, getting the people, like getting the things line up, the touch points, the scoring, the intelligence, and what is your ideal
pack? Yeah, we're tech agnostic. So like the best thing is what you have right now. It's way easier to get started with what you have versus trying to set up a new tech stack.
Cool. It's good advice. Okay, cool. So basically, when we were discussing this webinar, I'm going to skip forward a little bit because I want the juicy bit as well. You said you've got a nugget or a little immediate win, quick win. We love quick wins, obviously, even though I'm so skeptical about them. But you've got a quick win that we can put to work immediately. Why don't you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, everyone almost always forgets about their closed loss deals until it's like Q4. I'm like, shoot, we got to get a quick pipeline. Fun fact, closed loss is there all year round. So I highly recommend that you start with a closed loss program simply because you have the best data and no one is loyal to these accounts. If you really wanted to get the best data, you'd actually start in your current customer base. The challenge is people don't want to put revenue at risk for somewhat of an experiment. But if you've got buy-in to go build an expansion program, it's actually like the best place to start for an ABM program. But most people don't, and that's okay. So as you look at a closed loss program, I'll also outline the 4D framework real quick. It's data, distribution, destination, and direction. So data is a mix of who we're going after and why we're reaching out. So in the context of closed lost, who you're going after were good fit or best fit accounts that didn't move forward with your business. Your reason for reaching out is ideally something on their side or your side has changed that overcomes their past objection. Mm-hmm. So in a lot of product-based businesses, it's like, oh, we are missing this feature or functionality and this our competitor had it. Great. That's a good reason to reach out. Hey, we just did this product update that actually directly addresses what the other competitor had that we didn't. Like, if you're still completely content and have no complaints about your current vendor, no reason to talk. But if there's something that we could talk through that might help you have an even greater impact with solving this problem, maybe worth having another conversation now that got this updated feature or functionality. Great. Cool. That's a change on your side, on their side. This is one of my favorites. There may have been a blocker to the deal that like left the organization. So you don't have to say, hey, it looks like Susie left. Can we start now? But what you could say is, hey, I know it's been a few months since we were talking about this thing. Did you end up solving that problem? If not, it may be worthwhile to have another conversation. You just tie it back to, I know you're trying to solve this at this point. Have you? If not, we should talk. Really easy re-engagement program on that front. And that's also then your messaging.
Mm-hmm. So and you can always double up and hunt Susie down again where she's at the new company and ask, hey, maybe you need this now, or maybe you've got the budget available this time.
Yeah, if Susie was an advocate and couldn't end up bringing you in, I've done that for when I moved jobs. I really wanted a specific technology, couldn't bring him in because I got blocked, went to a new company, brought him in like within the first 2 months. It's a great play. But again, that's targets plus triggers. So something's changed on their side or yours. And then your messaging is nuanced based on your trigger. From there, it's then distribution. Ideal situation, this is actually really easy. You use the same salesperson that was actively working the deal and you have them reach out again. Now, what happens because their sales turnover, and that happens a lot. Their manager, ideally, is the person reaching back out, or let's say that your AE is, you know, not wanting to buy in. SDR does the outreach that books a meeting, and then they CC the AE on it as well for visibility, so that the prospect feels like the AE is involved.
It's the same team on the deal. Unless you obviously post the AE and you don't have the person, then you go.
Yeah. I mean, you figure it out, but the goal is familiarity from a name perspective, not a brand perspective. Mm-hmm. We want to re-engage that relationship from a relationship perspective. Next is in destination. So destination is just what content we're actually sending them towards. Ideally, it's something that actually educates them on what's changed, or specifically how you can help them today based on their new current situation. So like that's content typically. And then lastly is direction, and direction is just how we plan to track it. So like most organizations today have website tracking capabilities. So if someone's already cookied and they've already opted in for marketing communication or something along those lines, you can see what pages they're viewing. So if you send them content and then they click through a link and you see them on page for 2 or 3 minutes and then they bounce, that's good. And then you should follow up more personalized based on that engagement to then actually transition them into a meeting. Mm-hmm. So like, that's it. Everyone can run that today. May take about 2-3 weeks to set up, but like that's a great way to start Q2, is running that program for 60 days and getting meetings, and you start it in March.
Cool. Quick, what a trick question, I guess, is what if nothing changed? It's like, because obviously it's,
you can always manufacture something. Yeah. Like
new feature, some practical examples.
Yeah, I mean, I like in 6 months, if nothing's changed, like at all, that's insane. But like, for example, we actually just launched a closed loss program like 2 weeks ago. And what had changed is like, we've hired new team members to bolster our team. We've got new experience in-house. We've got new capabilities. But like in reality, we're still running the same processes and the same programs. We just have new team members. So that's something that changed on our side. For many of our clients on their side,
a different pricing strategy, or you know, there's a new package, or it could be as basic as a new
Lean in with that most of the time,
because
prices are going up, not down. So like we raised our prices. So I'm re-engaging closed loss deals at like an increased price point. Mm-hmm. So it's not a good, from my perspective, it's not a good selling point unless for some reason your prices went down, which is actually potentially a signal that you were overpriced in the first place. So like, I don't actually think price is a good measure.
That's good insight.
It raised a lot of questions. Mm-hmm. Whereas, hey, for example, I increased our prices, but it's also because I brought in like 10, 15, 20 year veterans in the ABM space. So like we can justify the price increase based on the increased caliber of talent. So like, cool. That's a logical thing, but I lead with the talent increase, not the pricing.
Yeah, fair. So it's really any big change you can put like a decent narrative around, and it's not like, hey, I'm just knocking on your door again for the sake of knocking, and preferably not. Yeah. We introduced AI to our like tech stack. Yes. Cool.
We've all gotten the message that's like, hey, it's been 6 months. Should we reconnect? And like, no, why? Like
we got a
6 months ago, you weren't helpful. You're still probably not helpful. So again, what's changed? Or final thing is really lean into the pain and just say like, this has worked super well for us. I actually invite our old prospects onto a podcast because most of the time we're losing to them. Either they like when we lose, it's typically to internal. They're like, we want to try this internally. So I just follow up 3 months later and say, hey, last we spoke, you were building an ABM program and thought you could get it up and running in 3 months. How'd it go? Like if it went awesome, I'd actually love to invite you onto the podcast to talk through the successful program implementation. If it didn't, should we re-talk? Like, should we re-engage? So no, that's the approach.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. I think there's a lot of value in that. And like you say, that is definitely something anyone can immediately like dive into. So it's a good way to pilot at least, or like get a very basic experiment going. Cool. Mason, we are out of time. Thank you very, very much for your time today. And for everyone watching who's interested in more on this, Mason does have a two-hour plus course with us. I started this morning. It's pretty insightful. It's very cool. We obviously just dive deeper into all of this, making it way more practical, giving you more playbooks, giving you everything that you require to launch this. So if you're more interested or interested in more in this, go check out the course. I'll send the link. And yeah, thank you very, very much. It's a pleasure to have you, and have a great day.
Yeah, thanks, Stefan.
Cool, man. Bye-bye.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Scrappy ABM. If you're looking for more content just like this, I highly recommend you go subscribe to our newsletter. we release weekly playbooks so that you have the actionable ways in which you can start to build an ABM program today. Just go to scrappyabm.com/newsletter to subscribe. And if you enjoyed this episode, we'd really appreciate it if you'd leave a 5-star review and hit the notification bell so you never miss an episode. I look forward to seeing you in the next one.